Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited to be joined here tonight by Jen from the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you, Michael. Nice to be here again.
Great to have you here. And we also have Bob, who is our IT person with us here today.
Thanks,
welcome, Michael. Bob.
Thanks, Michael. Nice to be here.
Great. Let's see. Jen, Bob, which one of you wants to start with the good news? I know there's a lot to go around.
Well, I was thinking we might let Bob jump in because, you know, many people may not have heard Bob's voice before, but indeed he's one of those behind-the-scenes fellows who's making a lot of the organization run. So I thought we might let him jump in.
Oh, great. Let's start.
Well, I was just sitting here thinking that it's kind of interesting to me that, you know, a lot of our group kind of lives at the end of a dirt road, and we use a surprising amount of technology for a group that lives that way. But one of the things I wanted to let people know is that we just finished uploading all of our archives of Open Air going back to 2002 when we were actually on a broadcasting on the Stanford University radio station.
Wow.
So if people go to livingcompassion.org and go to the Open Air site, they'll see a show archives page, and they'll be able to find all the shows going back to then.
Bob, I can't tell you how excited I am about that. And it was funny because I was just thinking, you know, how many shows have there been?
Wow.
And I actually don't know the answer to that question.
Neither do I. It's a lot.
Yeah, I think it's over 200, and perhaps one of our callers can let us know.
Yeah, well, and it's very fun, isn't it? Because it's really become a part of the history of the organization. I mean, that's really fun. That's 6 years of shows.
Yes, definitely.
Right, and the thing that I like about archives is that they remind me of like being on retreat, and you know sometimes when we do guidance, we get to record our guidance and then listen later back and find out, you know, what I said when I was identified.
Right.
And I think that, you know, when I know myself, when I've ever called into Open Air, I really want to hear the recording, and it's great that we're able to offer that. And so, yeah, so if people need to find out how to get those, just go to our site, and, you know, you can download those shows either just directly from our site, or if you're kind of a little more technically savvy and downloading our podcasts, you can get them as well there.
Great.
Good. So back here at the home front, we just finished a great retreat where we had a handful of folks come join us for a long weekend. They're people who have been practicing for a long time and are interested in facilitating and helping us bring the work out into the world and facilitating what we're working on as a really good curriculum that they're going to be able to facilitate in various parts of the country. So it's exciting because it's an additional way that we can bring practice out to other parts of the country and not necessarily have everyone have to come all the way here to sunny California.
Yeah, it sounds really wonderful.
Yeah, it was a great time, and it's always fun to spend time with people who are practicing on such a deep level as everyone in the Sangha is.
That's my experience as well. Bob, did you have some more?
I just want to talk kind of generally about kind of something I'm excited about this year is that we do a planning process at the beginning of each year, the Board of Living Compassion, called the Best Year Yet. Some of you may have taken the individual Best Year Yet training that we do at the beginning of every year. And one of the things I'm really excited about is that we kind of decided that the area that I'm responsible for, IT, you know, the role of it is to help facilitate the organization in doing what it needs to do in a way that supports the organization. And what I mean by that is that, you know, we have a very dedicated group of monks at the monastery who we really want to be offering training more than anything else. And as much as our technology kind of help them not have to do a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff of, you know, running credit cards and, you know, all the things that go into making a retreat happen, is going to be a benefit to the practice. So I'm really excited this year about working on that.
Yeah, and it's really paying off already. We're as Bob says, we're working on systems. We're working a lot on the systemic level, and we've hired some staff, as we mentioned in one of the other Good News Updates, who are coming in to essentially follow those systems for us. And really, it is having the effect of being able to free us up to offer more practice. You know, not today. I mean, we're still kind of as busy as ever, if not more, in putting these systems in place, but we can really see a big light at the end of the tunnel, and we're deeply grateful to people like Bob who are helping us to, you know, they have the expertise to put the pieces in place and even to find the systems that suit us and that work best for us. So, yeah, we're excited about that too.
Dan, it occurred to me, as both of you were talking, IT is the kind of thing that you're only aware of when it's not working. And, for me, I have the experience often that things are working.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah, and speaking of one of the benefits of technology, probably many folks know Sherry sends out a monthly email update to Sangha on all kinds of topics. And this last one that she sent out was about a new practice opportunity that we're going to be offering to folks who are far-flung, so people who aren't here right locally with us in Northern California, a chance over a three-month period to have a join in and deepen practice in all kinds of ways, using email, using the radio show, conference calls, and we've gotten an overwhelming response to that, so it's really, really fun. A couple hundred people have written in to say that really interests them. They really do want to practice in that way. And so that's been very fun to receive that response from people. And one thing about that is a couple people had the confusion that if they did the three-month-long practice period, would that mean that they wouldn't come on retreat during that time? And it doesn't at all. In fact, coming on retreat physically with us here at the monastery during that time would be great. I mean, I imagine it would be a rich kind of combination to do those two things. And if you were participating in the three-month process and here on retreat, we would make sure that you had access still to the conversation that was happening with the rest of the folks who were in that three-month process. So just to clarify that point for folks.
That's great. That's very exciting. I'm looking forward to it myself. You know, when I read that message, the sense I got was, someone really wants me to wake up.
Yeah.
And that message alone is really, I find it just incredibly supportive.
Yes.
It awakens that in me.
Yes, exactly. It speaks to the thing in you that wants to wake up and mirrors back, wow, there's someone who wants to support that, who wants to support that in me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Bob, did you have any other IT stuff to share?
Yeah, there's one other thing I wanted to tell people about is that we recently moved all of the blogs that we do for Africa, especially when the Africa team is in Zambia, giving us kind of daily updates on what's going on there. We moved it to a new technology. It's a blogging software that might not mean anything to everyone, but for people who sort of know how to subscribe to blogs and, you know, have their computer tell them when there's a new update coming, they can now do that with the Africa blog. And I think that's probably going to be helpful, Jen, when you guys head out to Africa pretty soon.
Yeah, I was going to say it's very timely. We are going, a couple of us are leaving. We have a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat coming up this weekend, and right at the end of that retreat, we're flying out to Zambia. It's quite a quick trip. We call it a business trip. We touch down, and we literally have our time scheduled. Okay, plane lands at noon. We're having tea with Steve about the building at 3 o'clock, and then that evening we're meeting with, and it kind of the week goes like that, and it's an extraordinary amount of fun, and we get a ton done, and we get to see all of our buddies in Ndola and in Cantalomba, and see how the building is doing, the community medical center building that's about 3/4 of the way finished, and touch base with all the women who work with us in Cantalomba, and see all the little kids who are eating and going to school every day. So, stay tuned for those blogs. There are 30 new children who have joined the program since the last time we were there. So we'll get to greet them and take their pictures and all the usual stuff.
That's very exciting. And tying together what both of you have been talking about, so Jen, you and Dave will be updating the blog.
Yep.
And then, Bob, if I go to the website and learn how to subscribe to the blog, then my computer will tell me when the new blog is posted. Is that right?
Right. And I hesitate to actually explain the process to people because with computers, there's always like 10 different ways to get from here to there.
Yes.
But, I would say that for people who know how to do it, you know, it'll be really clear how to do it. And for anyone who would like to learn, you know, they can probably just send an email to support@livingcompassion.org.
Yes.
And we'd be happy to help them out, because then they can tell us, you know, what kind of computer they have, and we can kind of make a suggestion from there.
Right, right. And I, in particular, am very excited about this because you, while you're in Africa, Jen, I'm sitting there about 10 times a day clicking the refresh to see if the new blogs are there.
That's great.
So that'll save me from that obsession.
That's great. Yep. Very good.
Well, I want to say thanks to both of you for being here today. It's fun and informative, as usual.
Yeah,
and
I'm really, really glad we added this to the radio show. It feels so good. It feels right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of fun.
Great. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks
Michael. Bob.
Have a great show.
Good
okay.
Night.
You too. Good evening, mm-hmm. Sherry. Sherry, are you there?
I am.
Oh, great. Great.
Well, that was fun.
That was fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I do too. And one of the things, well, there are several things that I really enjoy. One is I like this business of getting to hear from other people.
Yes.
It's not that we're not, you know, lovely, as I'm sure we are, but it's so fun to hear other voices.
Yes.
Now, I know, I understand Jen is on the radio periodically. It's just I never hear her because when she's on, I'm off somewhere else doing something. So I don't get to hear when the other folks do the show. So
right.
I appreciate it.
Right. Yeah, it is fun for me to hear from other folks as well. And it's funny, too, because I can see, you know, my ego has been invested in open air hosts for a long time. As be, you know, in that personality, and it's really it's a small place.
Say more about that.
It's not a very expansive open place in terms of sharing what's possible in life and with open air.
Yeah.
And so it's really, you know, once I actually do it, you know, it is fun and great to hear from other folks, and there's a lot of expansiveness that comes from hearing other people on the air like that.
Yeah. And one of the things, well, the IT stuff I'm really thrilled about. And I was so happy to hear Jen say that they're going to bring back or send back pictures of the 30 new kids in the school.
Yeah.
Because I've heard that rumor that the 30 new children had been added, and of course also the there's something that I think is coming out about some exciting stuff that's happening with the older kids, and so I'm hoping they will bring back some pictures of some of the older kids too who are being particularly successful in the school.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
As you say, we can just sit right there working.
Yeah.
Diligently working, and then when we get the information that there's a blog, we can just slide over there and indulge. I like that, indulge that obsession.
Yes. Great. Sherry, we have at least 3 callers here.
Good.
Okay, our next caller, you probably just got a message that you are now unmuted. Could you please introduce yourself and tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, this is Jen from New York.
Hi, Jen.
Hello.
Thank
you so much. I'm good. Thank you so much for making this available. It's
our pleasure.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, I wanted to talk about a particular piece of content that seems to be stumping my awareness practice.
Okay.
And that, it's been something I've been working with for a long time, and I seem to get stuck in a couple typical places with it, so I just wanted to bat that around. The content is around compulsive eating behaviors, and one of the places I have a really hard time working with that is the role of the mentor in my process at looking all of the in looking at what happens. I've been looking closely lately at sort of what happens on the physical level around my behaviors with food and working with ideas of hunger and fullness and really watching what that means in my body, like going into my body and really experiencing that. And while I've been doing that, I feel like I've been totally blindsided by the emotional side of eating. really had like a strong, last week I had a strong distinction between like the beginning of the week feeling very clear and excited. I was having all these awarenesses, and then all of a sudden whammied, like in the middle of major binging and all this sort of emotional things happening and reactions, and identified with all these sub-personalities, and I'm not really sure how I got from one place to the other.
Well, I think blindsided is a good image.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're going along, and all of a sudden you're buried under an avalanche.
Steamrolled is another one I often
yeah.
feel.
Yeah.
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 So at those points, I try and, like, call in the mentor, and I feel like I've just walked into a classroom with like 25 screaming children, and I have no idea how to deal with it.
Okay, so that's the kind of the is that the person who's here now? Somebody who's just kind of overwhelmed by the whole thing?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And when this happens, there's the overwhelm. Is there self-hatred?
Yeah, yep. And sometimes I feel like I start to have a conversation with what I think is a sub-personality, and the conversation quickly gets really contentious.
Uh-huh.
And that's when it becomes clear, okay, this is not a little child that needs to be mentored. You're nothing but self-hate that's going to argue with me till I'm blue in the face.
Right.
So I think there's some trouble sort of identifying when there's actually someone to be mentored, and when it's actually I'm just engaging in the conversation.
It's such a subtle place you're working. You know, that truly is the best encouragement I can give you. You know, what we're dealing with here, you know, those Buddhists, how they talk about these things, you know, lifetimes of karma, kalpas of karma that comes together in a particular lifetime. And we, for whatever combination of miracles, feel ourselves ready to address the suffering of all of those lifetimes. Now, of course, if somebody said to us at the beginning, you know, that is what you're doing, we would probably say, I think I'll wait for the next lifetime.
I'll pass, yeah.
I'll pass. That sounds way bigger than what I had in mind.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so here we go. And you get started on this, and it's just the most enormous task. You know, if you were going to start a business, an international business, and grow it to a $30 million a year business in the first 3 years. Can you picture it?
Yeah.
You would really have your work cut out for you, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you're have an MBA. I don't know.
No, I don't.
Okay, then that's a good example. You know,
yes.
I mean, the issues that would arise would just be unimaginable. And
that's what it feels like. It's
exactly.
Sort of like, God, where do I start? You know,
exactly.
It's
exactly.
Just in the span of 3 days last week, I feel like I identified about 12 different sub-personalities that needed tending, that were reacting to something that was going on, and like I felt like a school teacher, like at the end of her wits.
Yeah. So you know, I give that business example because what we all do is jump 3 years out, it's a $30 million a year company. Wow. What we don't go to is, there's really going to be a lot to learn to get to that point. Now, I'm telling you that in 3 years, you're going to have a $30 million a year company. Okay? So you might as well just relax and take yourself through the process of learning what it is that you need to know in order to be the head of that company. But what conditioning does to us is say, no, you have to already know it. This is a big mistake that you're completely overwhelmed by this. Your overwhelm is the proof that there's something wrong.
Right, that there's nobody present that's capable of doing this.
That's right. It really indicates is that you are doing something really huge. That's all it means. So you're going to, you know, again, you're going to, you've decided that you have this play that you're going to put on Broadway.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've written it, and now you've got to start putting all of the pieces of this in place. You know, you've got to find the money. You've got to get the theater. You've got to find the actors. You've got to do the costumes. You've got to, okay, you've got to get somebody to print the tickets. You've got to have an opening night. You've got to have publicity. You've got to have, okay? So,
and I'm a perfectionist, so I want to do it all myself, and I want to do it all well, and you know.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
and as soon as we get it, that all that is self-hatred, and the thing that keeps people ever from getting to the other side of their karma, then we have a chance of saying, of course I'm overwhelmed. This is huge. Anybody in their right mind would be overwhelmed. Anybody who's not overwhelmed is not paying attention. And so let's just breathe here. You know, all of those Rome wasn't built in a day cliches are for a very good reason. So let's remember this is a process. It's going to take a while. I'm going to have to keep working at it. And as I'm working at it, everything involved with this is going to come up. So I'm going to see all the stuff about the body. I'm going to see all the stuff about the mind. I'm going to see all the stuff about emotions. And then it's like somebody just took all of those things, tossed them into a cement mixer, and turned it on high.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. And then sometimes there's like little moments of clarity, like, oh, I get that piece.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then I feel like, oh, well, it's like, I feel like it's that game Tetris. I don't know if you know that, where it's like it's a little computer game, and when a line is complete, it sort of drops and disappears off the screen, and I sort of get that sensation sometimes, like, oh, I got it, another level.
Yes.
But it's sort of like, I want the game to be over.
Yes.
I want to have won.
Now, here's the thing. This is the part that's really hard for us to get. When we say that, it's because we have identified with conditioning. The heart actually doesn't want the game to be over. Can you get a feel for that?
Yeah.
Because it's your life.
Yeah, exactly.
This is your life. This is you finding freedom.
Yeah, what it wants.
Realizing who you really are.
Yeah, it wants the struggle to be over, the suffering to be over.
Yes, and so
when
you do it from your heart, the struggle is over. So this is where I say to people, I used to use this with my oldest grandchild, but now I have a new one, and it's she's more of an age for this. She's 3, and it's as if I were to say, how long do I have to do this? How long do I need to love this child? When is this going to be over? You see?
Don't want it to be over.
Don't want it to be over. Is it tough? Oh, yeah. I'm getting ready, actually, to spend a week with her on my own. It'll be the first time.
Oh.
Yeah. Are there going to be times when I go, oh, dear. I feel quite confident there will be. Right, I'm going, oh, this is a bad idea. Where's her mother?
Right.
And yet, what I will remember when I come to my senses is, no, this is my time to be with her. And this is what it's like to be with her now. And it's going to be different next year and different the next year and different the next year for as long as I live. But I don't want to miss a minute of it.
Can feel that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the relationship you're building with you, with that little girl who never had anybody who actually really truly could feel that way about her and deliver on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
That as much as the people in our lives loved us, and I'm sure, you know, most
still
of the time,
they
were doing the best they could, but they just couldn't be there in that way. But you can. You can finally give her what she actually deserves.
So one of the things that I think would be helpful for her is our setting limits and boundaries, but I have a really hard time with that around food. Like every time, how do I create, how do I make healthy choices without setting up rules
yeah,
for myself?
This is just something that occurred to me, and it's never occurred to me before, as far as I know, although I tend not to remember what I talk about. But you can let me know, okay? Do you have somebody in your life, a friend, a sister, or whatever, who pretty much loves you unconditionally?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, somebody that you could draw upon for support.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, then this is what I would suggest, that you talk to that little girl. What is her name? The little you?
The little me? I don't know. If
was she called something when you were little?
Often she was called Pumpkin.
Okay. All right. And so if that feels comfortable, because, that's who's way down there at the bottom of all of this.
Yeah.
Right? And so what you tell her, you explain to her what's going on. I'm a firm believer in telling children the truth. Even if we think they can't understand it, they can. And it's such a relief when we finally tell them something instead of just pretending there's nothing going on when, the vibrations are absolutely killing them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You tell her what's going on, that you really have difficulties with food. And, it's a lot of stuff that's involved and you're really working hard to get to the bottom of it, but you just really can't trust yourself right now. But what you want to do is be able to take good care of her. So you want her to eat really healthy food, but you want her to enjoy food and have a good time in life and have treats once in a while and be able to have fun with stuff. And so what you're going to do is set up a program that the two of you are going to follow, and then regularly you're going to contact whoever this person is or people are and say, it's time for us to have a treat. And so would you come along with us while we have a treat? And then you make that arrangement. Then you meet for ice cream or you meet for dessert or you meet for whatever it is. And then you go home.
And be bringing that little girl along to that.
Bring her along.
Yeah.
Bring her along. Let her enjoy it. This is the time. We've been eating our broccoli and our salads, and, once in a while you just need to cut loose and have a little sugar. But that's not the only source of sweetness in her life or in your life, because the relationship is bringing sweetness as well.
So if when I have this conversation with her, she starts to have a conversation back at me, then I'm not talking to her, am I?
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right, you're not. Yeah, because a little kid, what you're doing is having a process conversation with a little kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only time she's going to, kick up is if she's in the store and she sees something she wants.
Right.
Just like all little kids.
Yeah.
There's a Hostess cupcake or whatever is current, and she sees that and she's seen it on TV and she wants that.
Yeah.
And then you have to negotiate. That's where you bring in the good, strong parent who says, nope, that's not what we're doing, and this is our plan, and we're going to do this, and then we're going to have a treat. It's not going to be that. And once that relationship is established, kids are, little need machines, little desire machines. So it's always hard to be the, the strong, firm, supportive parent. And sometimes you won't be. Sometimes you'll just buy the whatever it is. And then you go, okay, well, lost that one, and go right back to the program.
Yeah, and that's the point where I tend to I watch the whole cycle of voices start again.
Yep.
You know, the
yep.
sort of
and you
the,
do.
The abuse starts, and
yep.
I shouldn't have done that. And,
that's
and
right.
Whole,
and so that's where you remind yourself, okay, we're facing lifetimes of karma here. This is big. This is the part where I get to see the abuse.
Okay.
You with me?
I'm with
yes.
you.
Okay. Now,
I'm up for the task.
Good. There's only one more piece to the task. You have to report back, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Keep in touch. Let us know. You know, make charts. Keep notes, you know.
Yeah.
And
good at all. I'm good at all that stuff.
Yeah, and I figured that. And as always, drop the standards to something that's manageable. And when the voices start, when the abuse starts, remember that the best response is, yeah, I know. Okay?
Okay. Thank you
right.
so much, Sherry.
I'm saluting you
oh, thank
as
you,
you go.
All right.
Okay,
take care. All right, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
Right.
Hello, my name is John March, and I'm the leader of a music project called the Zen Blues Quartet. For the last few years, this collaboration of some of the best musicians in the world has been gathering to record and perform as a way of showing our gratitude and love for the music of the blues. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my life, what a life, what a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have a couple, three more callers here.
Right.
Yeah, we have our next caller. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber. Could you please tell us your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Bonnie. I'm calling from Florida. Hi, Sherry.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Good, you?
I'm okay. I just wanted to thank you for all of the work that you're doing. I discovered Making a Change for Good last June, and it spoke directly to me, and I went out and bought a bunch of your other books, and I've been reading them ever since.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I'm actually back on Making a Change for Good now.
It's kind of timeless, isn't it?
Yeah, it's always applicable to what's going on in my life, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
So,
and so what is going on in your life?
Well, actually, I'm calling because I was hoping that maybe you would talk a little bit about projection.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I guess I'm going to kind of try to keep it a little bit short because I could get far too detailed and probably get lost in it. But basically, what I'm dealing with now, I suppose, is I guess I've been dealing with a lot of self-hate. Hello?
Yeah, something's going funky with the
phone connection.
Yeah. Let's try
it
again.
Okay. I guess the reason your books spoke so directly to me is because I've been dealing with a lot of self-hate most of my life, actually. And I guess I've gone in and out of it most of my life.
Uh-huh.
And there was a time period where I was out of it for quite a while, and I developed these really close bonds with some people. And I guess when I kind of fell out of that real confident period, I started to develop, you know, the negative dialogue and project it outward. And I believe that I've kind of come to the point where I've finally convinced some people that I love a lot in my life, you know, but, you know, not to take me seriously, things like that. So my question is, what do you do when you get to that point?
Okay. So do you see a connection between self-hatred and depression?
Yes.
And does that kind of feel like what happened? You were feeling really good and good about yourself and enjoying life.
Mm-hmm.
And the voices weren't really getting to you. And then you
mm-hmm.
began to slide into, would you identify it as depression?
Well, you know, some things happened, I guess, in my life. I ended up losing one of my best friends. It's kind of complicated, but basically my life kind of abruptly changed, and a lot of people went out of my life.
And
I guess I just never really saw that coming. So.
Uh-huh. And so as a result of that,
yeah.
Then you slid into this other place and the self-hatred was at you, the voices were at you.
Yeah.
And from that place in yourself, I hate to put words on it, but was it just a, would you call it a negativity or a,
I would definitely call it a negativity. Basically, I don't know, it just kind of says things. It tends to be like, you know, the critic or whatever, like everything that I do all day long, it critiques everything I did. It'll bring up, like, you know, anything I did that was, like, you know, that it calls stupid, you know, like whatever,
right.
An example
and,
to make me feel like a, you know, butthead. So,
right. And then would it also project onto other people in your life?
That they think that about me.
Okay.
You know?
So you're not projecting that onto them, saying they are blah, 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 but you're projecting that they think that about you.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And I think that, and I believe that they did not hold that opinion of me for a very, very long time, but I'm just kind of beginning to see signs that now I've basically convinced them, you know what I'm saying? And at this point, you know, I'm kind of coming out of it a little bit. Probably doesn't seem like it right now, but I'm coming out of it a little bit, and I'm kind of, I can see it. Like, I can see everything as it's happening, you know, and
yeah.
I'm getting better at not identifying with what's going on. I'm getting better at listening to the voices without indulging them.
Uh-huh.
But I'm kind of getting to the point where I noticed that maybe I have convinced some of them, and I'm wondering if it's healthy for me to hang around them right now, you know, because I don't blame them. I don't think they're really trying to hurt me. I'm fully aware that I am responsible, largely responsible.
And can you give me a specific of something that you know, the way it plays out? Like, you told somebody over and over and over that you are X,
mm-hmm.
and now they come back to you and say, well, but you're X. Is that what you're, can you give us a concrete?
Well, honestly, it's more subtle than that. It's like, the only thing that comes to mind right off the bat, it's kind of silly, but it's like, you know, these types of things, I guess, accumulating that get to me. I was sitting having coffee with a friend, and we were talking about some shows that come around our area. And I don't know, I guess I was trying to, like, you know, tell her about this one show, and I couldn't remember a band name or something like that. And then she just kind of, like, I don't know. I you know, to be honest, I don't know if I really want to get all that, like, specific with it, because then I tend to get, like, I guess, lost in the details. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, but it's my job.
Trying to understand.
It's my job to help you not get lost. But it is helpful to me if I have a sense of what it is that you're looking at, because there are it could be going in so many directions that I don't want to respond to something that's not actually happening for you.
Well, basically, we'll be having a conversation, and everybody's putting their input, and then I'll try to say something, and then they basically either discount it or they want to argue against it, you know. almost like they're questioning the validity of the source.
Okay.
Know, stuff like that.
Okay.
So.
And do you have a hard time knowing whether it's really happening or you're just a little on the paranoid side?
I guess I admit that I probably am a little bit paranoid, but, I mean, it seemed like there was a shift where, whereas before I could say, yeah, this really isn't happening, but now it's kind of gotten to a point where, like, I can actually see it.
Uh-huh.
Objectively, I think it is actually there. To what extent, I'm not sure. Maybe it's not even, you know, the end of the earth or anything. But,
right. Well, here's the thing that, and I'll just talk about this for me, okay?
Okay.
Because I think I have a process that historically that is similar to this, and
okay.
And that is that I am extremely sensitive to the things people say and how they say them. Okay, and sometimes somebody will say something, and it doesn't bother me at all because I know they're kidding or they didn't mean it that way or that's just the way it sounded, and it doesn't bother me. But at another time, when I'm in a sensitive place, then it bothers me. And I can't honestly tell whether there's anything different in what they're doing or if I'm just in a different place hearing it.
Right. Okay, so then the answer is just to practice finding center more often.
Well,
right?
You know, just
and
kind of paying attention to how you are. And like when I'm in that sensitive place, it'll be across the board. You know, it'll be really easy for me to get my feelings hurt, that kind of thing. But I'll notice it because it's true with like clerks in stores or, you know, it's just like, you know, whatever thickness is usually there with the skin is missing.
Right.
And so if I'm watching that, then I can have a sense that I don't really need to indulge the voices that want to make something out of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, what you were talking about a little while ago seems to me like it could really play into this because if you start being really sensitive and getting your feelings hurt or whatever that experience is for you, then that's an energy that you're putting back in the group.
Right.
That sort of feeds itself. Then you can get a reputation for, well, she's so sensitive. You can't say anything to her without upsetting her.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, there's definitely some energy, I guess, exchanges going on. I think most of them are probably, for a long time, were just kind of confused because they didn't know what was going on. It wasn't like I bursted out crying or anything like that.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
To me, that would be the thing that would be the most helpful. And it's what you started out talking about projection. So what is it that you're projecting? We actually call this the double reverse projection, where you are having a tendency to believe that people think about you what the voices are telling you about you.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and so just to begin to watch that and not to try to figure anything out, but just to notice, now that's interesting because the voices are talking to me about this, and I think he means that, or I think she's got that spin on it, or I project that what she's thinking about me is this. Huh, that's interesting. The voices are telling me this, and I'm projecting that she's saying that, huh?
Okay.
You with me?
Yeah, I guess just pay attention.
Kind of a little science experiment.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And will you let us know?
Definitely. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, good night.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Bonnie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that's fascinating, that looking at projection and I project, as you're talking about it, taking responsibility for what's going on with me.
Yeah, well, and as Bonnie is, you know, in the middle of it, and all of us know that place, it's just really hard to have any very clear sense of what's actually going on.
Yes.
Because we are so making up the reality that we live in.
Yes, that's my sense as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, I could... You know, I could be in a group of people who just despise me. But, you know, if I'm in a really good mood and I'm really happy and feeling good about myself, there's a very good chance that I wouldn't notice unless they get pretty darn overt about the whole thing.
Yes. Yes. Great. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break, and then we have two more callers lined up after that.
All right.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.watchdog.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Okay, next caller, would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, this is Rico in California. Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi, Sherry.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm, before I go any, I'm on a speakerphone. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm so deeply, deeply grateful for my great karma, my good karma for having met you some years ago, and it continues to unfold and permeate more and more aspects of my life. So that's a word from our sponsor of gratitude. So I have a question, and I hope it doesn't sound too heady because it comes from my heart, and I carry it in my belly. So an example of this question is, someone was going to be throwing away a boat that they built, and it was my neighbor's...
A boat?
A boat, a rowboat.
Oh, wow.
A Gloucester dory. And they said, you can never save it, and it's too far gone. Well, I've saved it. But I went to boat building school 37 years ago in Maine.
Wow.
And I was the least talented guy in the class, and most of the other guys were sons or grandsons of boat builders. So there's no 90 degree angles in a boat, as you can imagine.
So
this afternoon, just an hour and a half ago, I was gluing up some pieces that I fabricated, and they're kind of complicated and I glued the wrong side and I put it in backwards, and I was waiting for the voice of ridicule to attack me.
Mm-hmm.
In the same manner of derisive, demeaning commentary I had on my work skills years ago with these other more talented boat builders.
Uh-huh.
And it was like there was a gap. Like I was waiting for the shoe to drop. I say, come on, give it to me. Right? Like for self-hatred. And I said, oh, you know, I just made a mistake.
Right. Yeah.
I just made a mistake.
That's all.
It's a pretty complicated project I'm in. I haven't done this for a lot of years, and I've lost a lot of hair on my head since then. And so here's the gist of my question is, I think I've been involved with Zen Monastery now for 3 or 3.5 years, and I've done 3 retreats there, and I'm getting the rhythm of the mentor.
Uh-huh.
And I have my boyhood name, and that's who the mentor talks to. And I have to admit that life is so much more pleasant. And it's a lot more fun.
Yes.
And I think where it really shifted for me, where I really grokked it, was when I did my first There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And we had an is it okay if I spill the beans on one of the exercises?
No. No, it is not.
Oh, okay.
Mm-mm. Please don't.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked you.
Me too.
But anyway, I'm learning to hold a very gentle affection for this small child.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I have two grandchildren, and I mean, if they burp on me or poop on me or whatever, it doesn't matter because I see them for so little. They live in Manhattan, I live in California, and no matter what happens, it's just wonderful.
Right.
And
they can do no wrong.
Yeah. Well, that's what's happening to me in the relationship that I have to myself, and the mentor comes and stands up for this little being.
Mm-hmm.
Who, and in fact, I said this to Dave on the last retreat, and I said, you know, every time I read Sherry's book again and again, and I show it to people, you know, I buy them by the case and give them away. And the subtitle is what? How to Turn Self-Hatred, or what's the subtitle? There's Nothing Wrong With You?
I don't know.
Well, it's about self-hate.
Probably, yeah.
And I always thought it was such a strong word, but the more I pay attention and the more fun I'm having with the voice of the mentor and the kinder the commentary is, the more I realize, my God, there really is self-hatred.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Hatred is definitely not too strong a word. People, you know, over the years have pointed that out to me, that in their opinion, I use extreme language.
Yeah.
And, but as soon as, just as you're pointing out, as soon as people are looking at a depth, the kind of depth that you're looking, they get to the same conclusion. Well, it is hatred, isn't it?
It is.
And in the way that you're describing, if you said any of the things that those voices in your head would happily say to you, if you said any of those to your grandchildren, it would be horrifying. It's hateful. And we can see it when we are seeing it in relation to an obviously sweet, dear, innocent little person. And it's just as hateful when that sweet, dear, innocent little person is, in this case, a grown man.
Amen. So here's the question. Now, this has been the preamble.
Wow.
So
it's a really short question, though, huh?
Right.
Okay,
so,
good.
So here's the question is, so when rather than indulge in the situation, for example, when I glued the boat up incorrectly, and there's no attack,
mm-hmm.
there's a gap instead of attack, mm-hmm. almost like I was expecting an attack. It's like, whoa, isn't that something? Mm-hmm. But the question specifically is, I've gotten into this the groove, I guess, of the positive languaging of the mentor, right? So, I mean,
uh-huh.
so my question is, it's certainly a much more enjoyable life experience to be having the good guy on my shoulder rather than the bad guy on my shoulder. But my question is it possible that the good guy, the good voice, the mentor, can in fact be another tool for conditioning to keep us caught
yes.
in the dream?
Yes, it can. And the to me, the closest place that we can look, you know, the best chance we have of getting a sense of it is if we have simply gone from the negative to the positive. Because a mentor is not going to tell you something that isn't true. So if I am, you know, I'm your supervisor at work, and I am mentoring you to, you know, take the next step up, and we're working together, what we're working on is realistic. I'm not mentoring you by saying, you know, you are the most brilliant guy this company has ever hired. You should be the CEO right now. That would be probably silly. Okay? It would simply be going to the other side of, you are a hopeless jerk. So as the mentor, the information is, this is what we do. This is what you need to focus on. These are the skills that you're going to want to bring to bear here. These are some of the techniques that you might look into developing in order to be successful at this. You with me?
I'm here, following.
Yeah. So that's what I would look for. When you get over into the affirmation side of the equation, then it's no longer mentoring.
Right. So, I see the distinction. Because my experience is it hasn't been simply the flip of the bad cop,
mm-hmm.
the good cop.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, oh, this is what I always wanted to hear from my father.
That's right. And the good cop, bad cop, that's excellent language for what I'm pointing at, because neither one of those has your best interest at heart.
Right.
One is trying to scare and bully and intimidate you into something. The other is trying to con and schmooze and fool you into something.
Right.
Hopefully your lawyer is
right.
the one who's going to give you the straight advice about, maybe you don't want to say that.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay.
So, So I have one last question comment. Do I have time?
Sure. If we go kind of quickly.
Okay. So here I am. I'm working on the boat. It's kind of confusing. There's I put it in backwards, and there's no attack, and there's a gap. It's like, oh, isn't that interesting? My guess is, and this is kind of like a detective mystery story, but my guess is that through enough years and decades of this awareness practice that we might expect more gaps and less mentoring.
Oh, absolutely. Because, the real beauty of mentoring is when the relationship is such that it's understood that you are adequate to your life experience. It's just understood. So I may be standing there next to you as you're doing whatever it is that you're doing, but that's all.
Okay. I get it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sherry. So,
yeah. Oh, you're very welcome.
I really get this.
Yeah, enjoy the gaps.
I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
Gosh, oh, gosh, okay. Gosh.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
You have 2 minutes left on this call.
Thanks for joining us, Rico. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right, great.
You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Isha, and I'm from California.
Hi there.
Hi, Sherry. And last time we talked, you asked me, do you need to feel bad?
Uh-huh.
Just kind of popped in with that as I was talking. And so after that, when I found myself feeling bad, I asked myself that question, do I need to feel bad? And the answer was always no, I don't need to feel bad. But when I asked myself, do I want to feel bad? The answer was sometimes, well, yeah, maybe just a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So I've been thinking, seeing that this wanting to feel bad is similar to wanting to eat junk food, wanting to eat,
uh-huh.
wanting to think junky thoughts.
Yeah. Wanting to be unconscious, wanting to suffer, wanting to be identified with all of that instead of being here and present to what is.
Yeah, instead of being here. So today I wrote on my driveway with Sidewalk Chalk. I wrote the quote, worry is not preparation.
Uh-huh.
And then underneath it I put breathe.
Uh-huh.
And be still. And then I drew an inward going circle, spiral,
mm-hmm.
but with here in the center of it.
Uh-huh.
And then now in big bright letters with sun beams around it.
Uh-huh. This is on your driveway.
Right in front of my front door.
Uh-huh.
Can't miss it.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
And how was that?
It's really nice.
Uh-huh.
It's a wonderful sign.
Uh-huh. Now, next, are you going to paint it on the wall?
I haven't thought of that, but
uh-huh.
maybe. Yeah, that's a... I'm hearing that suggestion.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I understand I'm interested in what a lot of people would think are kind of odd things. But, you know, very few people would actually consider painting on the walls the information that they need to have in front of them to have the life that they want.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I just, it's like my walls are white, so I, you know, I don't want to disturb the whiteness or something that's...
yeah, with something that would potentially result in helping you to have the life that you want.
Yeah.
You know, we got to preserve this. It has to look a certain way. You know, your house needs to look a certain way. and you know, the question arises, well, why? Well, I, in my more paranoid moments, think it's because what surrounds us supports ego, supports the illusion of a separate self. And that's what gets just about all the airtime in just about everybody's life. But if we really wanted our lives to be different, we would be giving ourselves different information. We would decorate our houses in different ways. We would wear different things. We would surround ourselves everywhere with the life that we want.
Hmm.
But instead, I suspect what we get surrounded with is the life that ego wants.
Yeah, and it's like everybody's doing it, or a lot of people are doing it.
Yeah.
Majority is doing it.
Oh, yeah, I think we can almost go with everybody.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, isn't it?
Surround yourself with the life you want.
Mm-hmm. Because when, you know, I said that to you originally, and then you would think about that, and you would ask yourself that question, you know, that's a helpful thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we just did an email class recently, and the theme of the email class was creating the universe. And so we looked at the universe that we're creating, and what came out of it was this, little, you know, saying, what is the universe that I'm creating right now? And
mm-hmm.
so we did a fundraiser after the class for the work in Africa, and we've created this poster that says that, and it's, you know, it's got this bright colors and all this stuff on it, for people to be able to hang up somewhere that they see all the time.
Mm.
And
you're
that will
them?
Remind them, hopefully, to ask that question. But after a while, of course, people will stop seeing it. Now, I kid people at the monastery all the time that, you know, somebody has this idea, you know, we need to redo this place, and that poster goes in the garbage because it's all part of redoing the place. And coincidentally, what doesn't go back up is anything that reminds a person to be present.
So
and if we
ego's
really,
driving.
Yeah, oh, yeah, ego redecorating. And so if we really, you know, were interested in having this work, in waking up, then what we would do is get something like that, make copies of it, first of all, and just start putting it up everywhere. And once we got used to it, then put it up in all different places. You know, start hanging it upside down, make it in different colors. You know, anything that catches the attention and causes us to go, oh, and to be here, even if it's just for a split second. Yeah?
Uh-huh. Mm. And relationships are really hard you know, a lot of difficult stuff comes up in them.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading something about being addicted to the drama, and when I looked at that, I found myself being addicted to having an old habit, maybe not quite an addiction, to being the victim.
Oh, I bet you could go with addiction to victimhood. It's very popular.
Like, I found myself dwelling on a situation that my boyfriend had already apologized for,
yep.
And I just kept bringing it up.
Yep.
It's like three times after he apologizes,
yep.
I'm still talking about it.
Yep.
What
and
is
then
this?
Eventually, of course, he says, "What is up with you?" Right? And now he's starting to get irritable. Then
uh-huh.
you get upset that he's irritable. Then another fight starts. Yeah. Oh, you are absolutely right. There is nothing better to keep us at the center of the universe, to keep the ego at the center of the universe, than drama.
Hmm.
Any drama. You know, everybody hates me. Everybody loves me. I'm the worst person in the world. I'm the best person in the world. You know, I'm a failure. I'm going to succeed. It's the drama.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're right.
Oh, thank you. It's good.
And then having the courage to drop it and the willingness to come back to that, you know, that quiet, peaceful now, here.
Yeah.
The secret.
Yeah. And something else I just want to say is that I got your letter about your plans for the year-long program.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really excited about it.
Good. And you heard Jen say earlier, it doesn't mean you can't call into the radio show or do reflective listening buddies or come on retreat, right?
Right.
We can do all of those things. That it's one more thing that we want to do. It's kind of like the, you know, making copies of the poster. We just want to surround ourselves so completely with practice that suffering just doesn't have a chance.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay.
All right. Great talking with you.
Yeah. Good to talk to you. Bye.
All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Isha. You've been listening to another great edition of Open Air with Sherry Huber.
It was fun, huh?
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to second and third and fourth Isha's last point about that great email you sent out.
Yeah. Well, it does seem that there are a lot of folks who know that more support is what's required, more Sangha, more support for practice. And are ready to avail themselves of it. It's very exciting to me, very heartening.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because, why? Because it supports my practice.
Yes.
Let's face it, it's all utterly self-serving.
Yes.
Why do we do this? Because it supports our practice.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, and as you're pointing at, I think, from ego, it is all self-serving.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as we deepen the practice, it becomes clear that we're moving beyond that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. This has been fun.
It's been fun. I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.
All right. Good night.
All right. Good night.